Welcome back to the Good Life Project for all you guys that were here last week. Wonderful to have you all back again. And I really hope you found last week helpful. And for those of you that are here for the first time tonight, a especially warm welcome to you, because it's just so great to have you here with us. And to have the privilege of just sharing with you yet another of the truly liberating truths of the Christian faith, which is really what we're looking at over these 4 weeks, is the way that actually life with Jesus is a better life, or so we believe anyway, and that's what we'd like to introduce to you. Now, in a minute, I am going to touch a little bit on what we did last week, so if you weren't here, don't worry, we'll cover that. But I'm just basically so excited about this week's session that I really can't contain myself and simply just have to dive straight into this week's liberating truth. So I'm just going to introduce that right now. And what it is, this great big liberating truth that I want us to look at this week, is the fact that God is gracious. The fact that God is gracious. Now, I reckon that this is basically the greatest thing you could ever know, and it also happens to be right at the very heart of the Christian faith, okay, this truth that God is gracious. You see, authentic Christianity is actually all about grace. Really, if you want to get to the heart of what the gospel of Jesus is, well, that's it. You kind of don't actually have to go very much further. You've kind of summed it up in a nutshell. I could almost just sit down and leave you with that and you would know everything, although it probably does need to be unpacked a little bit. Okay? Now, just to make sure that we've got our definitions right, and just that we're all on the same page when I'm talking about grace and being gracious, what I'm referring to when I say that word grace is simply this. Okay? Grace is undeserved favour. Okay? I think if you really want to just boil down what that word grace means, that's it. It is undeserved favour. And I think perhaps the most helpful way to understand it is to think about what the opposite of grace is. So if you think about the opposite of grace, really that is earning. Yeah? When you earn something, that's kind of the opposite of grace. So if I go and I go work for some guy for a day and then he pays me $100 for working for that whole day, I've earned that money. Yeah. He owes me. It would be wrong of him not to come through and actually give me what he owes me, what I've earned. But if the same guy walks up to me on the street and just randomly gives me $100 for doing absolutely nothing whatsoever, well, he's shown me grace. That would be grace. I haven't earned it. Haven't done anything to deserve it. I am purely just the beneficiary of undeserved favour. I'm a recipient of grace. Okay, that's what we're talking about when it comes to grace. It's undeserved favour. Now, you might be wondering, well, why is grace so important to us as Christians? Well, it's important because of what we did see last week. And for those of you that are new tonight, here's your kind of little recap, okay? Last week, what we looked at, truth number one, was the truth that you're not perfect. Okay, really, we spent the whole night talking about that fact. We talked about the fact that we're not perfect. We talked about the fact that we can't make ourselves perfect. And what I pointed out last week is that actually, in many ways, when you really get a hold of that idea and you understand the fact that you're not perfect and you really own that truth, in many ways, it's actually very liberating. That's quite a liberating thing to just sort of accept about yourself, to go, you know, actually, you know, I'm not perfect. I know you're not perfect. I don't have to pretend to be perfect. You don't have to try and live as though you are. It's actually just quite a freeing thing to just go, you know what, I get that. I'm not perfect and I'm kind of okay with that. But it does leave us just with a little bit of a problem, and it's a problem that I deliberately didn't deal with last week. And the problem's this. You see, just accepting that I'm not perfect doesn't make my imperfection okay. All right? Just me accepting the fact and kind of owning the fact that I'm not perfect, it doesn't actually make my imperfection okay. The Australian author Craig Silvey, who kind of wrote the modern Australian classic Jasper Jones, he has this great line in that book, and it goes like this. It says, "The metronome of a good heart won't settle until things are set right and true." Yeah, it's a great saying. The metronome of a good heart won't settle until things are set right and true. Now, just in case you don't know what a metronome is, I'll just show you a little picture of one. You've probably seen one of these sitting on top of pianos around the traps. Yeah? A metronome, it's basically a thing that keeps time. So when you're learning to play your piece of music, you wind your metronome up and that little metal arm, it ticks back and forward, tick, 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 and it just doesn't stop. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. And you're sitting there trying to get better at the piano, you're trying to keep in time with the metronome, and on it goes, hopefully for your whole practice session. It just pulses on and on and on and on and on, ticking, 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 ticking. And what that quote says is that a good heart is like the metronome. It just keeps ticking back and forward when something's not right, when something's not okay. It doesn't rest. The good heart doesn't rest. It doesn't settle. It doesn't stop. You don't have peace until things are set right and true. And I reckon that's actually pretty spot on, really. I think Craig Silvey's got it right, for most of us anyway. Because when we do the wrong thing, we've got this sort of innate, deep desire to just want to sort it out, for things to be made okay, to kind of rectify stuff, to make everything right again. It's why the theme of redemption is just so massive in so many books and movies and TV shows in our culture. And you really do see it everywhere. I mean, you don't have to go too far before you're reading some book or watching some movie or watching something on telly that just has this sort of redemption story. We love redemption stories. You know what I'm talking about? You know, you've got someone, they've done something bad, or they've got a past, or they've kind of ruined their life or whatever it is, and then the whole story is about them just going to these extraordinary lengths to try and set it all straight again, to make things right again. So, yeah, like, I might accept that I'm not perfect, but just me accepting that doesn't actually deal with all the stuff that I may have done or thought or said or, yeah. It doesn't fix the wrong I've done. It doesn't fix the people I've hurt. That stuff doesn't just go away. So what's the answer to that? Well, unfortunately, I think most of the time the answers that we come up with are just unsatisfying and kind of fake. It's almost like when we sort of take an honest look at ourselves and humanity in general and the problems that we've got, it's almost like it's so bad that we have to kind of minimise things and adopt a kind of sort of semi-dishonest fiction that says, well, what we do doesn't really matter all that much. But I think deep down we know that's not true. We know that we cause others pain. We know that we damage this beautiful planet that we've got. Yeah. We know that we do the wrong thing. And so you hear people say things like, well, you know, you've just got to learn to forgive yourself. That's really helpful, isn't it? Hopefully that'll be a sort of not a constant thing. They might sort of pause here and there. I'll just press on. You'll just have to strain. I'll try and boom louder. Sounded like he was almost competing with me then. So you hear people say things, well, you just got to try and learn to forgive yourself. Yeah? Just learn to forgive yourself. And I don't want to poo-poo that entirely. I mean, there is something to that, isn't there? But again, it doesn't deal with what's happened. It stops me, well, maybe if I'm good at learning to forgive myself, trying to torment myself non-stop, if I can pull that off. But many can't. And again, it doesn't deal with the things that I've done to others. Just forgiving myself is actually quite a difficult thing to do. I mean, unless there's been some kind of redemption, you get left just feeling like things haven't been properly dealt with, squared away, fixed. Yeah, that the metronome of a good heart will not settle until things are set right and true. But I think the problem is bigger than what we do to ourselves and what we do to other people and what we do to the planet. Because the Bible teaches us that ultimately all of our imperfection, all that stuff we looked at last week, actually stems from a problem that we have with God. And the Bible would want to say that everything else is really just a symptom of that bigger problem, just a symptom of that bigger issue. Okay. It wants to say that God is the ultimate designer of us, that God created us, that God made us. Now, exactly how he did that, the Bible doesn't talk about. Could have been through a long evolutionary process, could have been through something else. I don't think the Bible's particularly concerned with the details of how God created everything. It just wants us to know that he did. So the Bible claims that God designed us, that God made us, and that as our creator, he's the one that knows how life's meant to be lived, how life best works, and that actually he's got every right to be the ruler of our lives. But the problem that we've got is that we ignore him. And we choose to live life our own way, to try and sort of make it up as we go along, kind of come up with our own sort of narrative, to live with him out of the picture. And again, according to the Bible, that's the ultimate cause of all of that imperfection and all of those issues that we have. Yeah. All of it ultimately stems from the problem of us rejecting God's right to rule our lives. Yeah. You want to trace back our imperfection? Well, the Bible would say that's where it comes from. And when we ignore God's wisdom and when we ignore his design for us, we hurt ourselves. We hurt one another. We hurt other species, and we damage this precious, precious planet that we've got. I remember a couple of years back, I went down to the Signet Folk Festival. Any other folk festival goers here, by any chance? A few fans? See those hands? That's good. Yeah, love the folk festival. Get down there whenever I can. And I was there, and one of the things I love at the folk festival is the little market they set up. You know, they've got these little stalls going on. And one year, I sort of stumbled across the radical vegan stall, which was really interesting. They wouldn't kind of enjoy our cheese platters tonight, so apologies to, you know, if you happen to be a vegan yourself, apologies, re that. But I got into this really interesting chat with them, and we got onto this idea of just how harmful we can be as a species. And they're kind of talking about how, you know, as human beings, we can be the most dangerous animals on the planet. You know, we're more of a threat to every other species than anything else, and actually we're our own worst enemy. In some ways, we are the scariest animal for us. I mean, a lion can do bad stuff, but it's nothing compared to what another human can do to me. Yeah. Indeed, no other species has the capacity to wreck the world like we do. And I've got to admit, like I said, having this conversation with them, and I kind of really started to sympathise. And there was a lot of truth, I thought, to what they were saying. Yeah. So, I mean, where does that all get us? Well, if we want to play the earning game and the deserving game, then what we deserve from all of that and what the Bible would say we've earned is for God just to get rid of us. Why should he, the perfect creator of the universe, the perfect good eternal God, tolerate us when we ignore him and just seem hell-bent on destroying his beautiful creation? And what that behaviour should earn is for us to be cut off or shut out or to be gotten rid of so we can't do any more damage, if it's about earning. I don't know if I've got any Matrix fans here, you know, classic 90s movie, The Matrix. Everyone's seen that? Yeah. There's this great scene in that with Hugo Weaving's character, what's he called? Agent Smith. Remember, no, Agent Smith, the glasses, I put him up there. And he's talking to Morpheus, who's sort of one of the heroes of the movie. And Agent Smith says this, he's talking about humanity. He says, "I'd like to share a revelation that I've had during my time here. It came to me when I tried to classify your species and I realised that you're not actually mammals. Every mammal on this planet instinctively develops a natural equilibrium with their surrounding environment, but you humans do not. You move to another area and you multiply and you multiply until every natural resource is consumed. The only way you can survive is to spread to another area. There is another organism on this planet that follows the same pattern. Do you know what it is? It's a virus. Human beings are a disease, a cancer of this planet. You are a plague, and we are the cure." Now, he's a bit down on humanity, old Agent Smith, I think it's fair to say. But, you know, there's something to what he's saying, isn't there? There's something to that. I mean, what do you do with the virus, with the cancer? I mean, you cut it off, you shut it out, you take it away, you make it so it can't do any more damage. And really, that's what we've earned if we want to make it about earning. Yeah. Now, once again, just bear with me. I realise that this is starting to sound a lot like the Bad Life Project again. I did this to you last week. This is going somewhere good. But we need to get this. I think this is the thing that we've got to understand about our imperfection and about the damage it does and about why it's such a problem. You've got to get your head around that if you are going to understand grace, because you've got to understand that grace is something that we desperately need. You see, what we need is not what we've earned. We don't need that. What we need is precisely what we haven't earned. What we need is grace. Now, this is the great news of the gospel, because grace is exactly what God gives us. And what's more, he doesn't just give it to us and just pretend all the bad stuff didn't happen. He doesn't just give it to us and try and sweep all the damage under the carpet and pretend that that's not an issue. He doesn't minimise what we've done, which is what we kind of like to do generally. We do something bad, well, we try and minimise it or pretend it's not so bad. He doesn't overlook the evil or the hurt or the tragedy. He doesn't just come up with this alternate reality where we pretend that we're actually all really nice and that what we do doesn't matter. Yeah. As I said, our normal ways of coping with our own evil can just be so unsatisfying, and they require this kind of tiresome, minimalising fiction, you know, where we just pretend that it's not that bad and we do our best to overlook things and forget about them and just, you know, forgive ourselves. But that's not how God operates. He shows us grace by actually redeeming us. And doing it in a really, you know, deep, satisfying, kind of meaty, meaningful way. Doesn't just pretend things didn't happen. He actually sets stuff right. And that's where the cross of Jesus comes in. That's why if you look at any Christian architecture, if you ever go off and trek around Europe and look in those cathedrals or, you know, look in the great art galleries, you just see crosses all over the place. It's why it shaped the continent so much. The cross is so important because it's at the cross of Jesus that redemption happens, that Jesus meaningfully bears all of the consequences that our rejection of God and our imperfection deserves. Yeah, all of the wrong that we've ever done, all of those things that we've done that's caused so much hurt and harm, he takes, he deals with, but he does it in our place. Yeah, the redemption happens, but you don't have to do the redeeming. That's what makes it so spectacular. You don't have to do the redeeming. It gets done for you. It gets done on your behalf. But it gets better. You see, Jesus was the one perfect human. Yeah, he's the one person that last week's talk doesn't apply to at all. Never rejected God. Never hurt anybody. Perfect human. And the claim of the Bible is that if you trust him as your Saviour and King, then his perfection actually clothes you, covers you, becomes yours. And so God no longer sees you as this imperfect mess, but rather he looks at you and he sees the perfection of Jesus. Yeah, you can be loved by God, you can be accepted by God, because in his sight you've been made perfect in Christ. But not because you've earned it, not because you've done something for that to happen. We saw that last week that's never going to happen. But because of the redemption that's happened for you. The Bible puts it like this. It's in your Good Life journals. If you've got them open to session 2, you'll see I've written it out there. I'll throw it up on the board just in case you haven't got it there. But This is from another book in the Bible, Colossians, chapter 1. That's what the big one stands for, and the 21 to 22, they're the verses. It's just a way that we kind of navigate around the Bible. But it says this. It says, once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behaviour, but now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you, and get this next bit, holy in his sight, without blemish, and free from accusation. In other words, perfect.
Yeah.
God can look at you as perfect and blameless. You didn't earn it. You can't earn it. You're imperfect, remember? But that's okay, because God has shown you grace. He's dealt with all of your imperfection and he's given you precisely what you don't deserve. Now this, I think, is where the Christian faith is pretty different to almost everything else. And the reason it's so different is because I think in our culture the idea of earning is just so massive for us. It's just such a big thing for us, you know. In most spiritualities, you need to earn. Yeah? You need to earn blessing. You're required to earn the favour of the gods. You have to attain enlightenment. You are responsible. You need to exert the discipline. You've got to take the action, and then you get the results. You earn them, yeah? But you know what? Even if you're not that much of a sort of religious person, or even if you're not that spiritual, chances are earning is still a really big thing for you. I'm willing to bet on it, yeah? I'm sure it is. Most of the big things that we live for require you to work and to earn. If you're into health and fitness, for example, you've got to earn that. You've just got to. I mean, no one can do that for you. If you don't do the work, you don't get the results. You have to earn it. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry, I know that's disappointing. Yeah. Can't do it for you. If you live for career, you've got to earn it. The boss, the company, the share, they're not going to give you the promotion unless you prove yourself. So much of our lives are just spent earning stuff. In fact, we learn it almost from day dot, don't we? I mean, even if we just start with school. The minute you get to school, you know, you're proving yourself. You're assessed. You're monitored. You're labelled. You're graded. And if we earn enough, well, you're blessed by the powers that be. But if you can't perform and you can't do well enough, then you're marked off as being less valuable, less important, less potential. And then we earn our way into the right university degrees, and we earn our way into the right jobs. And then we spend our whole lives trying to prove ourselves to our employers or our customers or our stockholders. So much of our lives is spent worrying about what other people think. So much of our energy goes into proving ourselves to people that we're valuable, that we're worth it, we're trying to win their favour, and it just really touches and eats into everything. We're terrified of what people think of us. So what do? Well, we dress and we diet and we do our hair and we do our makeup and we post the Instagram shot that makes us look hot, you know. We update the Facebook page so it looks like we've got this amazing life when actually it's quite boring. Yeah. We do it. And why do we do it? Well, we do it because we desperately want to win people's approval. We want people to look at it and feel jealous and go, oh, gosh, I wish I was like them. You know, constantly trying to prove what a good friend we are, what a great husband or wife we are, what a fantastic parent we are, what a great daughter or son or whatever we are, constantly trying to earn love and affection and status. Now, some of us even stress out when people come into our houses. Because if it's not up to scratch or clean enough or trendy enough or the food's not good enough or the kids aren't well behaved enough, well, what will people think? That's devastating. And it's just a tragedy, I reckon, for so many people, and you might actually be one of them. You might be really resonating with this. The pressure of constantly trying to prove yourself. Man, it can just be the source of so much stress and anxiety, and you just spend your life living under it. Debilitating. But imagine if you could stop. Imagine if you could stop. Imagine if you could just suddenly not have to worry all that much about what other people think of you anymore. Imagine if there was a way to just cut that out of your life. Well, I reckon that gives you the key to do it. And I reckon this is one of the amazing things about the good life Jesus offers, and why, as a fellow good life hunter, I just think that Jesus is so compelling. I think he gives you the resources that you need to do just that. Listen carefully, okay? The fact that God is gracious means that you do not have to prove yourself. Yeah? The fact that God is gracious means that you don't have to prove yourself. If you've accepted the gospel, if you've accepted Jesus' life and death on your behalf and this whole redemption story that it holds out to you, then what that means is that the creator of the universe looks at you as perfect. Yeah, the almighty, all-powerful, perfect creator God thinks you're perfect. You don't have to prove yourself to him, because by his grace, without you proving anything, without you doing anything, you're already holy and blameless and free from accusation in his sight. And here's the rub, and I'm going to finish on this. I know I'm going on, but I just want you to get this. I just want to rub this home, because I think if you get this, this is amazingly liberating, okay? Here's the rub, all right? If that God thinks you're perfect, yeah? If that God, if the all-powerful creator of the universe looks at you and goes, perfect, blameless, wonderful, yeah? If that God thinks that, if he thinks you're so valuable, if he treasures you so much that he would send his son to die on a cross for you, to show you grace, who gives a stuff about what some little insignificant, imperfect human being thinks of you? Can you see how that works? Yeah. Next to the opinion of the almighty creator of the universe, who is the very definer of what is right and wrong and good and bad, what does some little person's view of you matter? I've got two boys, and when one of them was in grade 4 and the other one was in grade 2, the younger one just went through this really annoying stage of just always disagreeing with everything that the older one said. I don't know if any of you did that. Have you got anyone that did that? If you did, you were a very annoying child, and you need to go home, ring your parents and apologise tonight, okay? It's so annoying. Unbelievably annoying. And I remember one day we're driving in the car, and the older son, you know, he's piping up, sharing about school that day, and he goes, oh, guess what I learned at school today? I learned that Jupiter is the biggest planet in the solar system. Yeah, I said, oh, isn't that lovely? And then straight away the young one goes, no, it's not. It's not. You know, and from that little disagreement, this whole massive argument kicks off in the back seat, and I'm just getting mad. I'm driving in the front seat, and with my youngest son just staunchly denying Jupiter's status as the largest planet in the solar system, and my older one's just getting angrier and angrier and angrier, because, you know, that's what the teacher said and all the rest of it, and this fight's going on, and I turn around and I just have to say, dude, okay, look, who cares what your 8-year-old brother thinks? Yeah? Your parents, your teacher, NASA, yeah, the whole scientific community of the world agrees with you that Jupiter is the largest planet in the solar system. Yeah? Your little 8-year-old brother's opinion counts for nothing. No one cares. It has no bearing on anything. Yeah? Now, that is what the grace of God allows you to do when it comes to other people. Yeah. That's what it allows you to do when it comes to your own value and your own self-worth. Because if you meet someone who doesn't like you, you know, or doesn't think you're good enough. You know, or doesn't think you're trendy enough or a good enough parent or a good enough worker or doesn't think you're attractive enough or whatever. Who cares? Really, who cares? Because if you trust in Jesus, the creator of the universe sees you as perfect. And next to him, everyone else's opinion counts for precisely nothing. It's like an 8-year-old disagreeing with you. Yeah. When you understand God's grace, it is so incredibly liberating because you can get off this horrible, enslaving treadmill of having to live your life constantly trying to prove your stuff. And you start to realise, you know what, people aren't all that scary after all. Next to God, they're fairly insignificant, actually. You don't have to fear others. You don't have to fear what they think. You don't have to prove yourself because God himself has made you perfect in his sight through grace. Not through what you've done. And that's really our second big liberating truth here at the Good Life Project. God is gracious. And that means you don't have to prove yourself. I'm going to hand back to Mel and we'll spend some time discussing.
Sorry everyone to interrupt. We've been sent through a couple of questions, so I might just get Dave up now and run through those. Sorry to make you stop talking. So we've got three questions and we'll start with the hardest one. Okay, so the first one is, if you think your life is pretty good, you know you're not perfect, but you're still very happy, why then do you need all of this?
Yeah, it's a pretty good question, really. And I think that's kind of a pretty common sentiment, I think, in modern-day Tasmania. I've met a lot of people that I think feel that way. And actually, to be honest, sometimes I feel that way too. Probably most of us do from time to time because we live extraordinarily privileged lives here in Hobart, Tasmania. Well, a lot of us do, and certainly a lot of us in Kingborough do, and really lives that are kind of unparalleled, I think, around the world. Like I've travelled a fair bit, I've lived overseas, even in other first world countries, and I've got to say that the kind of good life that we have in this part of the world. I mean, even in terms of Australia, I don't know if anyone sort of lived on the mainland much and done the sort of the massive big city thing, you know, where you're just spending hours basically just to go anywhere or do anything and it's all. I mean, this is a remarkable place, isn't it? I mean, look at where we are. I mean, Kingston Beach, we don't even think Kingston Beach is that great compared to most of the beaches we have on this island. And yet it's actually a really nice beach. Like, most people would kill for a beach like that. So, you know, it just, that flows out. I mean, you can still buy a house. That's still doable in Tasmania. got amazing produce and amazing things. So I think we really do feel like, in some ways, our lives are pretty good and we're pretty happy. And we kind of have that sense that we're not perfect. I think it's easy for us, though. So I'll answer this question in a couple of ways. I think one problem that we've got is it's easy for us to kind of, when things are going okay for us, and I guarantee you they won't always, but while things are going okay for us, it's easy to feel like everything's fine because of where we live in the world, you know. The reality is that things might not go okay for you, so you've always got to bear that in mind. And when life turns around and kicks you hard in the butt, that's another thing, and I think that's something that's worth thinking about. Well, how am I going to go when that happens, if that happens, and it may well. That's something we'll explore later. But I think also part of the problem with our world is that we don't think about our imperfection enough because we live in a big world, we share it with a lot of people, and a lot of people don't have anything like this. And part of that's just because of the inequality that there exists in this world, and part of us having all of this comes at the cost of a lot of people not. So, I mean, there's a whole heap of things once you start to dig quite deeply into not just what you do, but what you don't do, and, you know, start to wrestle with that, imperfection can become a big problem. But, you know, a lot of the time we choose not to think about those things or deal with those things. So I think there's that side of it. Also, I think, as I sort of mentioned in that, there's the issue of God. Now, I mean, I don't know where everyone sits with the idea of God. I know there are people here that very definitely do believe in God, and they believe in the God of the Bible. There are people here that maybe believe in an idea of God, but they're not quite sure which God that is. And I'm sure there are people here tonight that don't believe in a God. But if there is a God, and he is the perfect God of the Bible, I guess, and this is where the Bible would come at it, you've got to think about, well, where do I stand with him, and what does he think of me? Because that's going to affect an awful lot. And so I guess that's why I would say that, that exploring this good life stuff is important for everyone. Now, you might get to the end of all this and decide, no, actually, I don't think there's anything in it at all. I don't think that there is a God, and whatever. Nice cheese boards, great cured meats. Kind of guy made me laugh a few times, had a glass of beer with my mates, and that's it. And okay, that's fine. Like, if you get to the end of all of this and you walk away there, you may very well decide at the end of all this, look, this just isn't for me. I don't think it's got anything to offer me or not. But I think it's great that you're here. I'd encourage you to come back and just hear the whole thing. But that would be my answer to that question. I hope I actually ended up answering that question. And sorry, I started rambling. And if, by the way, if with any of this it's your question I'm answering, and you just go, hang on, he didn't answer the question at all, or I want to come back at that, I'm going to hang around afterwards, so you don't have to do that in a big crowd. You can come and grab me, and I'm happy to chat as much as you like. Yeah.
Okay, so the second question is, if you truly believe God, if you truly believe God thinks you're perfect and you follow him, could that give you the mentality that no one else cares, and that you don't, and that you have a little bit of a I don't give a stuff attitude? Did I read that out?
I think so, yeah. I think from the way the question sounded, it sort of sounded a little bit like no one else, like you don't think anyone else matters, perhaps, is how that sounded to me. But again, come and grab me afterwards if I'm on the wrong track here. So question is, if it's just me and I think God's made me perfect and all the rest of it, then does that sort of mean that no one else matters? And what was the last part of the question? And I have this whole I don't give a stuff. Yeah, that's a really good question too. And I think I actually heard, I mean, Richard Dawkins or Christopher Hitchens or one of those kind of really famous atheist guys kind of get something along those lines out on a Q&A or one of those sorts of shows, and kind of say, actually, that's one of the big problems with Christianity, is because, you know, you're there, you go, well, everything's cool with me and God, so then it doesn't really matter, you know, what I do. I don't have to care too much about anyone else, and I just kind of don't give a stuff, and I just do my thing and whatever, you know. And I can see why you might think that, definitely. This kind of gets on a little bit to what we're going to look at in our last session, I'll say it now anyway, just in brief, and we'll cover that more in the last session. The interesting thing is, I mean, I've only just given you a sort of snapshot of the very centre of the Christian faith, and I do think this is the centre, but there is much more to it. And the reality is, when you come to know the God of the Bible, you don't live under the judgment of other people anymore. So you don't have to justify yourself to other people or worry. And there is a sense in which that's true. You don't have to worry what they think of you in quite the same way, because you're not out to prove yourself to others. But the staggering thing about Jesus is that what he does is he calls you to love other people the way that he loves you. And so that's where it goes. So it's like, get to know God, accept the redemption that's available in Jesus Christ, and then Jesus Christ calls you to a life of Christ-like sacrificial love, where you basically are devoted to other people. Not because you have to prove yourself to them, and not because what they think of you ultimately matters all that much, because it's really only what God thinks of you that ultimately matters, but because God sees everyone else as incredibly precious, valuable people, so much so that he would send his son to die on the cross and do all that stuff. And that he actually, what he actually calls us then to do is to go out and love others that way. So you don't give a stuff about other people. You care very much about other people. And in fact, other people start to shape your life in amazing ways, but just not in that way that often they shape our lives before you know Jesus, where they're people that you've got to prove yourself to and meet standards of and live up to and stuff. Yeah.
And the last question is, if I'm imperfect, then how does God seeing me as perfect change me at all?
Yes, yeah. That's such a good question. This is such a good idea. I think this is Jane's idea to do question time, and I thought, nah. But actually, it's really great, isn't it? Good, well done, Jane. Shout out to you. And that's great. Here's the really interesting thing. And again, this is kind of getting into the last week, so make sure you come back for more detail on that. But here's the interesting thing. God just seeing you as perfect actually doesn't change you as such. Just that doesn't change you as such. Because that's kind of the point, is because if the whole point is that I haven't earned it. It's something that's just given to me. It's something that's given to me despite how I behave. And the good news of that is that you can't actually lose it by stuffing up. And that's one of the wonderful things. And for a long period of history, this is sort of going back sort of pre-1500s, most of the Christians in the world actually thought that, right, once I become a Christian, I have to live like X, Y, and Z, and I have to obey all these rules, and I must do it absolutely diligently. And if I don't do it, then I can actually lose God's love, and God can actually no longer be pleased with me, and God will no longer look at me as perfect. And so they had all these traditions and things that you had to do. And then if you did stuff up, there are all these little kind of things that you could do to kind of fix it. You'd go and see a priest, and you'd give money, and you'd, I don't know, some of them would whip themselves with whips. And if I did all that kind of stuff enough, then that would kind of get me back into God's good books, and I'd go on again. But then, oh no, I've stuffed up again, so back I go to the priest and I give more money and I whip myself some more and I do whatever it might be, go on a massive pilgrimage or, you know. So for a long time, Christianity was in this kind of interesting place where that kind of did come into it. But what I think the Bible teaches is that actually, no, quite apart from anything that you do or anything after God, through the redemption in Jesus, sees you as perfect. But again, that's not the end of it, because whilst you don't have to do anything to receive what Jesus has done for us and to get that sort of, to have God look at you as perfect, and whilst you can't really lose that by stuffing up, God does start to work in you and change you little bit by little bit. That's the other thing that you'll find in the Bible and that we'll look at later, is that your life does actually start to change. Now, you don't become perfect all at once, and you still do make mistakes, and that's why it's so good that it doesn't depend on you having to do anything necessarily. But we do believe that God does go to work in our lives, and little bit by little bit, you do start to change. And there is hope of change and very real change. And one day, the Bible teaches that Jesus will come back, and when that happens, all of the imperfection will be gone forever. And that's the ultimate great hope of the Christian faith, is that one day the life as we know it now, with all of the problems and imperfections and things that just plague us, one day Jesus will come back. The big good life project that he's at work in all of us will be completed, and we get to live these perfect lives. Lives actually will be perfect in a perfect world, and that's forever. So that's the ultimate big thing, but we'll do more on that in week 4. Mm.